Good morning, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to CPFL Energia's first quarter of 2011 earnings results conference call. Today with us, we have Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr., CEO of CPFL Energia, and Mr. Lorival Luz, CFO and IRO, as well as other officers of the company. This call is being broadcasted simultaneously on the internet at www.cpfl.com.br/ir, the investor relations site of CPFL. You will also find the presentation for download, and we inform that all participants will be in listen-only mode during the conference call during the company's presentation. Afterwards, we will have a Q&A session when further instructions will be given. Should you need assistance during this call, please press star zero for an operator. I would like to inform you that this call is being recorded. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of CPFL Energia's management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events, and therefore they depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of CPFL Energia, leading to results that differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now we would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr. Mr. Ferreira, you may proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, analysts and investors who follow us and who listen to this earnings results conference call, first quarter of 2011. Let's go to page three, where we have the highlights of the quarter. During this quarter, we started to report our results on two different bases, a comparable basis on IFRS. We had our balance sheet in 2010 in IFRS, therefore we already have this comparison, and it is important to start evaluating this based on what we call the pro forma, regulatory pro forma process, which is a process that will be mandatorily be tracked by the agency, and that will allow us to put more clearly the recurring themes of the company based on this so-called regulatory accounting process. Based on that, there is no change in what regards our revenue, so we are announcing a growth in our net revenues based on IFRS of 5%, 3.023 billion during this quarter, and in the EBITDA and the net income calculations that we will detail later on, we already have the two different comparisons. We have the EBITDA reported in IFRS growing by 3.9%, reaching 1.020 billion during the first quarter of 2011, and in the pro forma regulatory process, we reached 896 million with an 8.1% growth year-on-year. What is important to say here, and that we will make it very clear a little bit later, is that the difference between the two EBITDAs reported corresponds exactly to the regulatory assets and liabilities as the main component of this variation. For regulatory purposes and for the establishment of our tariffs, the pro forma regulatory pro forma EBITDA is more adequate. Our net income, as you can see, has a drop of 4.5%, reaching 466 million reais in IFRS. The drop would be smaller according to the pro forma net income regulatory basis, 2.3% drop, reaching 380 million reais. Overall, our results are being driven by the growth in our sales, and that we will be detailing afterwards, 5.4% on a recurrent basis. on the specific case of the net income, because of the startup of projects and the increase in interest rates of the CDI, we have a slight drop during this quarter. It is important to mention that in this quarter, we had the tariff adjustments that are listed here in one year, and more recently, the Paulista, 6.11%, and all the others that occurred during this period, both for the small concessionaries in the states of São Paulo, Santa Cruz with 8%, 6.84% Mooca, 6.57% Sul Paulista, 6.42% for Leste Paulista, and 5.22% in Jaguari. All these tariff adjustments happened in February 2011. We have already shared this in recent webcast, that is to say, both the acquisition by CPFL Energia Renováveis, that is to say, the incorporation of CPFL Energia Renováveis, when we announced the merger between CPFL and ESA, and also the acquisition of CIF Energy for 1.494 billion. We will be reporting this process. After these two transactions, we maintained our credit rating, AA+, and we also approved in late April 28th, the grouping and the split, the reverse split and the split of our stock that we had already announced as a proposal last year. Finally, the company, for the third consecutive year, was elected the most sustainable electric power company in Latin America in 2011 by Management and Excellence magazine. We will be referring to that at the end of the presentation. Now let's go to page number four. On page number four, we have the breakdown of the market. I always refer to the right because we had this resolution by the state government of São Paulo in late 2010. This was the last month that we reported. On the left, the total amounts of the month and the billed amounts on the right. The comparison was not possible on a comparable basis because the legislation was enacted in the middle of this period. Now we are reporting a 5.4% growth in our sales in the concession area of our distribution companies, and this corresponds to a 1.4% growth in the amounts billed, that is to say, in the captive market, and corresponds to a very strong growth, 18.4%, in the free market, free consumers catered to in the concession area of the eight distribution companies of the group. In the lower part of the slide, we see the detailed by segment growth. This shows the vitality of Brazil right now with the growth of industry in high voltage and low voltage, 4.2%, industrial residential, 5.3% growth, commercial, 6.9% growth. In the other categories, in the other segments, namely in the rural area, 7.4%. On a weighted manner, this means 5.4% growth overall in the group. When we consider the total energy sales and those that were billed directly to consumers and concessionaires, we see 1.4% growth in the captive market, which is the one that is billed directly to consumers and distribution companies, and the free market with a 2.3% drop. Reminding you that our report shows some non-recurrent events, namely in the supply to EPASA at the beginning of this year, and that has already been concluded. Overall, we had a 0.5% growth on the billed basis, that is to say, billed directly to consumers. I think it's important to mention this moment that the market is living here in Brazil. On page five, we have some drivers of this growth. If we consider the very positive performance in the second half of the year. It has repercussions, and you can see that it has repercussions in all segments. And we mentioned two specific segments, commercial and residential, because they are billed directly by the concessionaire. We have a real wage increase, 9.6%, an increase in credit, 14.4%. Retail sales, because of these two moments, 10.4% retail sales increase, and furniture and home appliances going up by 16.5%. You can see, based on that, the results that it brings related to energy consumption, and we adjust it seasonally here, and we present to you what we can measure on a daily basis, which is the sale in megawatts hour per day. What we can see very clearly is a change in the trend as of the second half of last year with a major growth, and we are only measuring in megawatts hour per day from December last year vis-a-vis March this year. So we can see a growth in this quarter of 4.4% on a daily basis in the residential segment and 5.1% on a daily basis, seasonally adjusted as well, in the commercial segment. So this shows very clearly the effects stemming from this increase in total payroll in the country and the increase in credit in the country, with a positive impact on the residential and the commercial segment. Now let's go to pages 6 and 7, where we show our variations both in EBITDA and in our net income. We can see on the upper part of the slide the breakdown based on the regulatory EBITDA. We have the effects of the accounting procedure of assets and liabilities that go to the tariffs afterwards, but in the IFRS procedure, they happen at the same time. They are simultaneous. So we start with the regulatory EBITDA of last year, 829 million in the same period. So then you have the regulatory effects that are added to that, basically related to the regulatory assets and liabilities, the graphic account, that is to say the CVA, 153 million reals, which posted according to the IFRS model. It establishes the starting value of this quarter, 982 million reals. To these 982 million reals, in this figure, we have three important variations that establish the 3.9 growth that I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation. The first one, of course, refers to the increase in net revenues, 81 million reals increase. And this increase in the net revenues is made up by two positive events. I think you remember that I was talking about the increase in the TUSD of the free market, what is billed in the concession area, 18%, and this means a 40.6% increase in the TUSD revenues, 98 million reals. Besides, of course, we have the startup of our projects, namely Foz do Chapecó and the Paza, bringing an additional 79 million reals to this position. On the negative side, in January, during the whole of January, we had the recognition of new charges by the agency, and this means 20% increase in sectoral charges in deductions from the operating revenue, 63 million. So we have two positive effects and one negative effect, and they are recognized in the tariff in the next step, and they establish the increase in 81 million reals in our revenues. And we have two other events. This amount is smaller, but it has an impact on the EBITDA, a 0.8% increase in energy costs and charges, amounting to 11 million reals. And here we have the breakdown. First, an increase in the energy charges, mainly the system service charges, ESS and connection charges, 23 million reals in these two charges. And on the other hand, the positive aspect, the reduction of 1.1% in energy costs, and specifically linked to the drop that we have been seeing, the foreign exchange rate affecting the purchase of Itaipu, on a cash basis for the company, and in IFRS it's not reported. And finally, we have the third element, which is the increase in operating costs and expenses by 9.2%, or in absolute figures, 31 million reals. It is important to stress here that we have the startup of these plants for the Chapecó HPP, Baudin and Epasa TPPs, and because of their startup, the revenues, we have the costs of these operations, 10 million reals overall. And in the first quarter of last year, driven by the slight delay in the transfer of Epasa to the group, we have the premium paid by this postponement in the ANEEL authorization. And you remember that when we started to invest in the plant, it had already a delay vis-à-vis its commitments, all covered by operations in the company, and there was no kind of delinquency at all, as we see in other areas of the market. So the 6 million real premium was paid, besides an event that I forgot to mention, the physical inventory of assets. The distribution concessionaries are having their tariff review now, and it is their obligation to carry out the physical inventory of their assets. So the 10 million are recovered in the tariff when the tariff reviews happen, but it's a non-recurrent event because it happens 1 year before the tariff reviews. And I also wanted to mention that last year, 2010, after the first quarter in June, we usually have most of our salary adjustments in our operations. And at the time, we had an average adjustment of 6.1%, amounted to 8 million in our payroll expenses on a quarterly basis. Okay, so having said that, it is important to stress that our recurrent cost of our payroll and material and third-party services, etc., adjusted by the event that I have detailed, would have been 6.1%. That is to say, very close to the adjustment that we had in 2010 in terms of our payroll, and much lower, or lower than the IGPM for the period, which was 10.9%. And lastly, in order to allow our analysts to have a comparable basis, we incorporated the regulatory effect, 124 million reals, which would be deducted from the EBITDA in IFRS, and that would be the regulatory EBITDA, which is the object of the evaluations by the agency, close to 900 million reals, which corresponds to, on a recurrent basis, a regulatory recurrent basis, a growth of 8.1%. So it is a positive result from the market viewpoint and also positive from the viewpoint of operating costs management for the company. Now let's go to page number 7, which refers to our net income. So the same rationale on the right and on the left. So we have the net regulatory effect of the amounts that we have just mentioned, 150 million and 120. So on the net basis, 98 million, referring to the first quarter of 2010, in IFRS, 488 million. And as I said before, a 4.5% drop, reporting net income for the quarter, 466 million reals. So here we have the evaluation of the main variables that establish this result. The first, I have already said, 3.9% increase in the EBITDA of the company. And the second one is a decrease in the financial result, about 59 million reals, or 49 million reals for the comparable basis of year on year. And this was because of a 40% increase in our financial expenses amounting to 75 million reals. And it is important to stress that practically half of that is driven by the startup of the projects, which are financed. And of course, as of their startup, they start to have the financial expenses referring to their financing. 34 million specifically are due to financial expenses corresponding to financing for the implementation of the projects that are already in operation. And on the other hand, and you can see this on the right of this chart, We had an increase of the Selic rate, which indexes about 59% of our financing operations, 2% to 2.6% year-on-year. A 30% growth year-on-year in the Selic rate, and because of that, we had an increase in our financial expenses that are restated by the Selic of about 36 million reals, which justifies the increase in our overall financial expenses. So the start-up of these projects on one hand and the increase in the Selic rate on the other hand, and the positive effect of the cash investments of the company. So we have an increase in our financial revenues. However, it was not sufficient to offset the increase in our financial expenses. So this 25% increase brought about 25 million increase in our balance sheet. So 75 minus 25 means in our bottom line 49 million. Besides, we have a 16.3% increase in depreciation and amortization, also because of the start-up of these plants. So you have all the details for Foz do Chapecó and Baldin. And finally, the positive effect of the decrease in income tax and social contribution due to the change, the slight change in our results. So it was a very predictable result. The company's results, driven by higher sales, expenses under control, and we had these commercial start-up with an increase in financial expenses, and that changes the result slightly. So having the same on the right, the net regulatory effect, 85 million. We have here net regulatory net income of 380 million, corresponding to a drop year-on-year, a drop by 2.3% year-on-year. Very well. Now let's go to page number 8 to re-emphasize the creation of CPFL Renováveis. On the left, we have all our assets that are the objects of this operation, our biomass operations that are under CPFL Brasil, besides the acquisition of the 4 wind farms in operation of CIF Energies and the 22 small power plants, which originated from Paulista, object of the regulatory split carried out 10 years ago, and our small power plants, SPPs of Sul, and besides the CPFL Energia, which was the investment vehicle of Baldin, and the other wind farms in investments today that participated in the auctions carried out in 2009 and 2010. So we are carrying out our merger with ESA, which has 12 SPPs, 11 in operation, 1 under construction, and 4 wind farms under construction as well. With that, we have 648 megawatts in operation already because of this merger, and an additional 600 megawatts in certified projects, an additional 2,734 million in projects under development, 2,741 in the case of SPPs. This means that they will have their executive project and their environmental licenses and all the other regulations and all the set of array of operations having to do with authorizations by the agency vis-a-vis these wind farms, which means to say that their installed power on one hand and on the other hand their capacity factor to establish the assured energy. And finally, in the case of biomass, this means making these projects feasible vis-a-vis the mill owners. On the left, we have CPFL Energia. And it's a very satisfactory operation, and we can have more details on page number 9 regarding the ownership structure of this transaction that we believe will be concluded by September this year. On May 4, we have already forwarded the document to ANEEL and to BNDES. We have already held meetings with these two agencies, very good meetings, and we are working on making this feasible and all the regulatory parts so that the transaction may be made feasible. We will have a meeting with CADE as well, with part of this process. We believe that in the light of the first talks that we had with them, we believe that this final restructuring of the company will occur between August and September this current year. We are talking about the company where GPFL will hold 73.6% and the current shareholders of Airset 36.4%, a company that has an equity value of 4.5 billion reais, and that for projects under construction, 380 MW already, and with a cash contribution of 571 million reais by shareholders, as you can see on this screen number nine. Now let's go to page number 10, where we have more details about this portfolio in operation, both assets coming from CPFL Energia, the 22 SPPs, the four biomass plants, the four wind farms that stem from the CIFI operation, amounting an installed capacity of these assets amounting to 493.7 MW. In average megawatts, the assured energy, 211 MW, average megawatts. We have Airset with the 11 SPPs that they have, all brand new, made in the last few years, and that have an installed capacity of 154.5 MW. In average megawatts, a very positive relation, 95.4 MW, average megawatts. To a great extent, this establishes the final configuration of the ownership structure of CPFL and Airset. One-third and two-thirds in average megawatts, with an adjustment based on the cash position that was done by the Airset Group. Here we have the details of the PPAs, the purchase power agreements coming from CPFL, 39% in Proinfa. Basically, the wind farms acquired together with CIFI, bilateral, involving CPFL Brasil, 31%, the free market directly to consumers, 8%, and to be defined, 16%, besides 5% in auction. These are the more recent wind farms. In the case of Airset, 36% in the free market, contracts already signed with the consumers, and Proinfa, 32%, and in the auctions, 12%. We can see more clearly on the lower part of the chart all the projects in operation already coming from each one of the players. You can see also the projects under construction, something close to 380 MW. The 600 MW which are certified will be the object of qualification of these companies according to their strategy in the next auctions. The overall assets under development amounting to 2,741, which gives us a very important growth reserve for the company in the near future. On page 11, very briefly, some comments on the acquisition of CIF. The words, the holding company, Gentos S.L., amounting to 950 million reais, 544 million reais as net debt. About the qualification of the farms, the capacity or load factor, and also the Proinfa pricing. These farms have just recently been operating about 1 year. Here we have a breakdown by farm, and we have the load factor between 28%-48%. Obviously, this acquisition also brought to us, in addition to technical capacity, we also have more than 20 experts
not only in farm development, but also maintenance and operation of these farms, which is something new and also important to us, considering our potential for growth in wind power. In addition, we also have a project portfolio close to Quintanilla Machado, which is the closest, and we also have additional 412 megawatts of certified projects already included in CPFL Renovables operation, in addition to 320 in development projects, adding to 867 megawatts. On page 12, just to give you a sense of the status of our projects under construction, part of the merger process, well, they have to be concluded before the merger. They are very well on the schedule, as you can see, except for Pedra, which is scheduled, or this investment should be up and running in the second quarter of next year. As to the rest, from 54 and 88%, already in the final phase, we have Bioformosa, also trying to break down the investment scheduled. And we already have the capital structure in each one of these projects when it comes to BNDES. Here we show not only financing under a long-term interest rate, but also if we consider the previous program, PSI, or Investment Sustainability, and we ended up by being fortunate enough to have it applied to all projects. And we have a fixed amount of 5.45% for some assets of the previous FINAMI, which were also included in this process. So this is very positive, ranging from 10 to 13 years for each one of the investments, which I said before, are at a regular or adequate construction pace. On page 13, here we have our investment underway for wind farms. Actually, two investments for wind farms, Santa Clara and Euros, and also Campos Duzentos and Euros. Different steps, Santa Clara in the first auction, scheduled to be the startup second term of next year. The capital structure is ready, financed within 16 years with long-term interest rate plus 1.7. IPC contracted of 801 million reais. Next, on the second column, we have Campos Duzentos Dois, which was qualified in the auction last year. And finally, Campo Duzentos 1, 3, 4, 5, and Euros 5. These are the projects that are now used for the free market. And they could be together with Campos Duzentos 2. This decision has already been made in terms of contracting, and the amounts are related to that contraction action, and also in terms of financing with BNDES. Now on page 14, we just want to show you our schedule for the startups, vis-a-vis what we said before. So we have movements between the second and third quarter of our sugarcane fired operations. 75 megawatts now in the second quarter, 40 megawatts in the third quarter, and the last project of the second half of 2012 with 70 megawatts. For SPPs in the first quarter of 2013, under construction by URSA, additional 20 megawatts, and for wind farms, scheduled to start up in the third quarter of 2012 with 188, and the third quarter of 2013 with 258 megawatts. As a result, we can also have a potential assessment of our contracted energy. In dark green, we have already contracted, and in light green, uncontracted, which will be the purpose of these operations in the free market. And obviously, they also allow the company to better qualify these farms for operations vis-a-vis A-3 auctions and reserve auctions that will happen in July this year. So the strategy is being defined by the company, and it will be soon disclosed to the market. On page 15, we just want to report the company's growth process, or the group's growth process in terms of energy generation, more specifically. This year, stemming from the conclusion of these projects, this is our stake with CPFL Renováveis. This is just related to our stake. And then we'll reach 2,640 megawatts early the second half of the year. And also we have plans considering current investment to be close to 3,000 only with the conclusion of the wind farms under construction and our stake for CPFL Renováveis. Next, page 16, just to show you that, well, today our date is expected for July 2012, A-3 to biomass, wind, and natural gas, July 2011 for PPA 20 years and a hydraulic source 30 years. For the reserve auction, the same date, biomass and wind power 20 years. That's our long-term contract. And this will also feed up to other alternatives for CPFL Renováveis in addition to the project for natural gas, 224 megawatts. In Espírito Santo, that will also be involved in the A-3 auction. Obviously, we are expecting potential licenses for this group of hydropower plants for A-5. That should be in late this year. And we keep on working based on these projects. Our engineering department and also partners are further assessing our chances, particularly in major hydroelectric projects that still remain in Telespires, Apiacás, and Ribeirão Gonçalves, and other significant ones. So we keep on working with our engineering department, prospecting other opportunities so we can keep on growing in hydroelectric power plants. And we've just concluded our major project, Foz Chapecó. Now, on the next slide, we'll just give you some brief comments on our debt profile. As you can see on the first quarter, it dropped slightly from 7.98 to 7.68 billion reais. That's the net debt, obviously influenced by the cash composition of the company. We have here cash and cash equivalents. As you can see, in late April, we paid dividends. So naturally, the company had higher cash, almost 2 billion reais. And this variation between the net cash position in December and March determines this drop in the adjusted net debt to 7.68. We also try to show, well, we have projects operating now, and we can see some results in the first quarter already. And we can also see a drop in the net debt EBITDA ratio from 2.38 to 2.27. And on the other side, we also have the breakdown to make analysts' lives easier. Impacts from projects underway already with a contracted debt, but excluding EBITDA. In this case, from now on, we'll only be reporting and posting biomass, which are in the final construction phase, excluding EBITDA, and wind farms that are beginning to be built. So this can be normalized once this financing happens. And then rather than 2.27, we have 2.11. As I said in the beginning, we also maintain our credit rating after both transactions by Standard & Poor's and Fitch Ratings. And then next, we can also see our debt breakdown. And we also try to detail from this quarter not only a breakdown between long-term interest rate and CDI, as we did previously, in addition to IGP, which is the index for financing, debt financing of the company vis-a-vis pension funds, coming from privatization, 20 years IGP, but also the part coming from operations that are beginning to be more significant, prefixed in the PSI program. Prefixed here amounts to 4%. Of the total amount. It's important to highlight that in addition to increased interest rate, our cost went down to 4.7%. Lastly, on page 18, we have the impact on the company stock. We had a positive quarter, exceeding not only Bovespa, which was negative, but also our 9.73 on a comparable basis. We closed at 12.6 and slightly higher with Dow Jones in our ADR, considering the foreign exchange appreciation. So here we have a breakdown of the company comparing to the main indexes on the right. We also have stock exchange indexes, and the good news is that it also increased volume and the company's liquidity. This March, we have 35.4 million reais on a daily basis, or 20 million in New York, 16 million in São Paulo, and as a result of both factors, we had an appreciation in our market cap, which at the end of the first quarter was 22,320,000,000 reais. I conclude my presentation on page 19, just highlighting something very important. We always are acknowledged, well, energy companies, basically, they are long-term companies. Companies that, to a great extent, are part of communities that have a very strong relationship and necessary relationship when it comes to the environment, preservation, and sustainability. Therefore, this indicator that is in more details in terms of how it is calculated and also sustainability compliance, which can be quantified not only considering risk assessment. This methodology includes 150 different criteria to be analyzed in companies and states. This is very good for CPFL. We were ranked the top company greater than 90% in the index, and for the third time in a row was elected the most sustainable energy company in Latin America. So we are really honored, and it shows a very successful strategy when it comes to an energy company focusing on each one of these dimensions. So these were my remarks with my team of officers, Olival, Gustavo, Marcelo, Roberto Castro, and Alessandro. We will be here happy to take any questions you may have, our analysts and investors. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star one. If you want to remove yourself from the queue, please press star two. Our first question comes from Marcio Prado from Santander Bank.
Good morning. Thank you for the conference call.
I have two questions. One is more focused on results, the second is more sector-related, but both related to regulation and distribution and also accounting purposes. When it comes to the results, focusing on IFRS, not only CPFL, but we have a series of companies reporting the EBITDA income higher than the market, probably because of this transition phase. So my question is the following: what about CPFL's net income? It is way higher in the first quarter compared to what you previously had, and chances are we are going to have something even stronger, and maybe also in the second quarter. When CPFL analyzes dividend payments, for instance, in the past, overall speaking, the company had a 95% payout. I assume that the analysis for payment were more focused on sustainability for that payment, but coincidentally or not, that led to a 95% payout compared to Brazilian GAAP. Do you envisage an adjustment in the payout as a result of the stronger income accounting or postings related to IFRS? So what is the outlook for the IFRS and payout? Do you think there will be a striking difference when it comes to income posting? And the second question has to do with the final ANEEL proposal when it comes to the tariff review, the new regulations, the X adjustment. Could you comment on that, please? What is your opinion when it comes to the previous proposal and
What are the expectations and the outlook for the tariff review processes, Piratininga, for instance, probably in the second half of the year?
Thank you.
Well, let's address results first. Our vision is slightly different from yours. The result this year, if you compare it to last year, and by the way, the effects stemming from regulatory assets and liabilities are virtually equivalent. I would say it's slightly lower because of the startup of two projects and expenses. So maybe that's why the net income is slightly lower compared to the budget. And the difference is not significant, particularly when it comes to the net income that would be earned if we hadn't had IFRS. What I'm trying to say is that the dividend distribution company policy of the company is at least 50%. It's a public policy. We've been trying to have a stronger base, 95%, for two reasons. First reason, the company cash. If we don't use it, we have a negative arbitration. So that's the main reason why we are constantly managing our capital structure in order to try to optimize it. That adds value to shareholders. They can have a more adequate and timely use to the funds, and the company has a capital structure that can strongly mitigate income tax payment. On the other hand, obviously, if you have a potential acquisition, well, that's the only condition that we might consider changing the payout, not the policy. The policy would be maintained. So that has not proved to be necessary, I mean, this kind of approach, particularly because considering the company's financial rating, we have been having positive access to the debt market. I think this can be evidenced by the costs. They show the company's vitality, not to mention that the company can also use the capital markets. Hadn't used it so far, but considering a potential acquisition or a major acquisition, that's also an alternative to fund the acquisition. So right now, even if we consider IFRS effect, and if we check, well, 80 million reais, that would be the difference. Right now, we don't foresee any need to change our method. Obviously, only the future will tell more appropriately. And I'd like to remind you that over the last quarter, stemming from the result of the second quarter of last year, we also wanted to provide our shareholders, or all shareholders, actually, lower volatility in the balance sheet. That's why we also consider those 200 million reais from the deficit of the said foundation in 2008. So we could be having a leeway and mitigate strongly any kind of potential volatility stemming from the foundation's results. With that, undoubtedly, our policy is very cautious, considering our minority and majority shareholders, all the company's shareholders base. We understand the policy is adequate, and we are also trying to apply it in order to have a good capital management structure. What about your second question, Anel, right? I had the chance to show to some journalists, to share our vision. I think this process had a very positive interaction. As the tariff process revealed, well, we provided the best number of contributions involving not only the stakeholders involved in the review, distribution companies directly represented, and also through the association, but also the civil society, significantly contributing to the process. And that is a clear evidence to me that the energy issue or energy price is something that has been a concern by everyone, but not in the sense that we have to lower costs at any cost. I think the signs shown by the process showing that it was closer, or it followed the direction showed by the distribution company, but it clearly stated the need that this sector and the segment of the energy business, more specifically, should be sustainable. In other words, I always try to recall you that over the last two cycles of tariff review, the contribution made by distribution companies concerning privatization up to now with the final tariff was lowered by 50%, from 50 to 25%. So if there is a segment that contributed to moderate tariffs over time, it was actually distribution companies. It was the only that did it more objectively. All the other components, for several different reasons, well, they had increase in stake or even larger or higher than inflation rates. The only one that was way below inflation rates were distribution companies. And that came from the privatization process and the tariff review process, encouraging the price gap base in order to improve productivity. And that actually happened, and this productivity could be shared with consumers. Therefore, reducing the stake of distribution companies in energy prices. It is true that over this time we also had a significant increase in transmission, but not because the price of transmission increased, but because the transmission system, in order to be more robust and more reliable, virtually tripled its size. So this increased stake of transmission, to a large extent, is thanks to the improved structure that has been used to provide more trust and reliability to all consumers in Brazil. On the other hand, we also had an increase in generation, virtually aligned to generation index, which is the IPCA index. But what improved more than what we expected was an increase in charges and taxes. ICMS, for instance, the main charge, it has different policies. They vary among different states, but that's a significant amount, even higher compared to distribution that renders public services. On the other hand, we also had a change in PIS-COFINS regime, not to mention the increasing charges that over the time had the highest of all increases that we saw throughout the chain. So modest tariffs have to be pursued, and the right too should be only focused on distribution? No, that's not true. So just going deeper into my answer, I'd like to address two topics. First topic, we had some awareness changing the direction or the change. So we do have a perspective to increase WACC and also improvement in the X factor. We also have to consider annual regulatory framework. So there is a set of important actions that are part of the technical notes. What is our opinion on that? Number one, this is not enough yet. It is our understanding that there is room for greater acknowledgement vis-a-vis WACC in order to have this service. In order to provide sustainable services, we cannot confuse the proposed WACC by a concessionaire that started 15 years ago that has, well, yesterday I was asked, do you think we should exclude foreign exchange risk? My answer was, I have no doubt we are going through a more timely moment when it comes to foreign exchange rate. I don't want to judge any values if it's 160 or 180, but what I have to say is that over the last three tariff review cycles, right after the privatization, we had a mismatch of the so-called range, and it was two. And we also, one day before the election of Lula president, we were close to four. And in 2008, the dollar was close to 2.50. So obviously, as a trend, the dollar is becoming more stable, but there have been fluctuations at given times in the economic cycle, and they can be very significant. From the regulatory aspect, well, we evolved by creating CVA, but please bear in mind that the working capital is there at this company, and they maintain foreign exchange. And consumers, well, this variation split into 12 months, and also they are pegged to Selic. And we know that when we have this kind of difference or impact decoupling in foreign exchange, especially exogenously, the financial system also becomes more entropic. And in order to finance working capital, be by anticipating or paying in dollars in terms of energy purchase, the amounts are higher.
I remember that in 2008, we went to lending operations with the banks with a shorter term, and we even had a longer term for 2 years at 125% of the CDI, and we carried this position to the consumers, and not only the exchange rate variation, but also the dispatch of TPPs at 100% of the CDI. So I would say that there is room for a debate in terms of bringing this WACC to a more adequate level, and it is different from the WACC that is being applied as an assumption for the generation or transmission auctions for a very simple reason. First, because of these auctions that are going to happen in the future, so you're going to look to one single position for the future, and there is no tariff review for these projects over their useful life, so the amount that you get in the auction will be a hedged rate of return. It's almost like a long-term security indexed to the IPCA. It is different from those who have been here for 15 years and that at every 4 years is submitted to a tariff review process in order to capture all these imperfections or variations in terms of the market. So you must not mix up the application of a WACC to a future auction with the establishment of a WACC for a concessionary which is already underway in operation, because this concessionary has already had bigger variations and will have to be submitted to this tariff review every 4 years. And on the other hand, I think there is room for evolution in this debate. And in what happens, in what regards the X factor, there is a recognition that this decrease in the participation of distribution companies in the total tariff of 50%, which is around 25% nowadays, has as its assumption investments that were made for increasing productivity, reliability, automation, more sophisticated IT systems, loss prevention systems or loss management systems, and you have to invest in all these areas. Of course, in privatization, you had to have voluntary layoff systems or redundancy projects. And when we talk about investing in systems, in technology, in automation, we are talking about higher investments with a shorter term for the return. And the X factor has to share the scale of the concessionary or the market gains, but it also has to make the investment in quality and productivity increases feasible, as well as the IT investment feasible. Of course, if we were to calculate or to capture all these gains in 1 year time, of course, all consumers would be losing and the investments would be made unfeasible. So it hasn't come to the point that we consider as being sustainable, but such as the WACC, it is in the right direction. And finally, I believe it's important to recognize the theme of the other revenues, and there is a big difference of understanding on the part of concessionaries yet, because these are revenues that are non-operating revenues first and foremost, and it's not a recurrent revenue for the company. Ideally,
all companies would never exceed their demands. Ideally, companies wouldn't have low power factor, and be it the collection system of the companies or the system for reserves in their substations, be it reserved for overload purposes or protection reserves or reserves for the power factor for reactors, that shouldn't be done. That would be the ideal situation. However, this is not the real world. So ideally speaking, for each one of these aspects, there is a loss on the part of the concessionaire, or there is a cost to be borne by the concessionaire, or the risk of the concessionaire not receiving. How many companies do we have in our concessionaire that they went bankrupt and they didn't pay what they exceeded? How many companies didn't have their load factor or their power factor being too low in their views, and they went to the court and we had to hire lawyers, and sometimes we don't get our money, or sometimes we have to extend the terms of payment. So this is not something sure that we can count on. This cannot be shared, and it has never been. Not even when privatization was carried out, it was considered, because such as is the case with our exchange rate, which is being more stable now, and our inflation rate went from 80 to 6%. So you can see the situation, and you need time for things to stabilize. When we get to this situation, there will be nothing left to be shared. So let's really focus on the stability situation, recognizing that endeavors must be made in order to achieve stability. Overall, I think this is, in a nutshell, the direction has really given us some appreciation in our stock, and we believe that we must further discuss matters so that we may reach a balanced and sustainable sector, reminding you that the sector is relevant not only because of the collection with no delinquency that it has to transfer to generators or transmission companies or charges and taxes. There is no option for delinquency. Everything that is billed by the concessionaire is delivered to the chain with no delinquency whatsoever, but it's also a very good sign of growth. And as Brazilians, we are proud of this very precise process, that is to say, the auctions and the very stable process, and to a great extent it is due to the qualification that the concessionaires had in terms of developing future market planning systems, and on the other hand, of establishing the PPA, the long-term PPA, which is considered by the financing agents, especially by the BNDES, as a AAA security, and it is not a AAA because the sector is still trying to reach an equilibrium. And I'm very proud of the major participation of society in this process of interaction with the agency, because it showed how much society appreciates stability, and I think ANEEL was sensitive to that. And with the correct argument and a more in-depth discussion, I believe that we will be able to reach stability, and therefore we will be able to consolidate everything that we have been doing in the sector, making it a sustainable sector, a growing sector that can work with efficiency and with low tariffs. I know that my answer was very long, but I think it was necessary. I would like to make one remark, if you can talk about that. Of course, everybody has to have a chance. About the payout, the volatility of your results will be increasing because of the end of the CVA. That's what I meant. You used to have a very stable policy, both in the first half and the second half payout, in order to keep the dividend per stock more stable. Maybe you will have to increase the volatility of your payout policy so that you may offset the increase in volatility in your earnings. I know it is a little bit counterintuitive, but in order to have a more stable dividend payout policy, maybe it will have to be more instable or unstable. Okay, so thank you very much for your answer. I would like to remind you that in order to ask a question, you should press star 1. I would like to add something to what Marcia said. Undoubtedly, and we have mentioned that, the IFRS, due to the fact that it does not allow an adequate reporting of the regulatory assets and liabilities, it does bring about a volatility degree. And our policy has a minimum of 50%, 50, and we have been doing this with 95. And if it becomes necessary so that we may keep being a company that has a growth strategy to pursue, and on the other hand, that may give adequate dividends to our shareholders, of course, we will be paying keen attention to this volatility. Right now, as I said before, it does not hinder what we have been doing. Of course, time will tell, and we will be able to track this. The policy will certainly not be changed. We do not believe that IFRS could bring a degree of volatility that could impact over 50%. However, the payout could have to be adjusted because of a higher volatility, and we will have to track this. And the intention of the company is to comply with the policy. Secondly, as we manage adequately our capital structure, based on the aspects that I have already mentioned, we intend to keep a high payout. And of course, it will follow the results that we achieve. Our next question comes from Mr. Vinny Sucanho from Credit Suisse. Wilson, good afternoon. My question has to do with auctions. In previous presentations, in previous webcasts, you gave us an idea of the demand to be contracted in these auctions. So could you give us an idea of your expectation for A-3 and still talking about auctions and regarding competitiveness? After quite a long time, natural gas came back to these auctions and you have a supply contract. And as you are competing with other companies, and in the last auctions, wind was very competitive. Do you believe there is room for natural gas to compete with the level of prices that we had in the last few years already in A-3? Vinicius, the first answer is the following. Something around 1,200 average megawatts for A-3. Your question is rather intriguing as far as it concerns competitiveness. We believe that price will go up slightly in the next auctions, and this could bring about more competitiveness between gas and wind. But I believe that natural gas is something important to be consolidated as a thermal source of energy in this auction, and this is one of the reasons why we have been developing this kind of project. And we have the joy to see one of our projects qualified. There is an expectation, yes. And in the last auction for wind energy, we saw a major reduction in prices. But at the same time, we are living a moment, on one hand, of implementation of many plants in Brazil, many manufacturing plants that needed to be fed with power to be made feasible. So the rationale of the auction itself led to this. Both entrepreneurs and suppliers were put in a checkmate, in fact, and the plants did receive the necessary energy. And on the other hand, we had a surplus of equipment because of the crisis in Europe, which was very strong, and the situation is going back to normal. We see some growth already in the U.S., because of Fukushima and renewables such as something very present in the company's strategies. And I believe that in the coming auction, I believe we are in the right direction, yes. And we are placing energy in the market at a competitive price, at the low price, and the competition process leads to this result. But the situation that we had, and this is my personal feeling, the situation that we saw last time, will not be repeated, at least as it was in the past. I believe that rationality will prevail so that we may avoid the hurdles that are in our path. Of course, we must have entrepreneurs that are qualified and that are skilled from the technical viewpoint and that have the necessary resources so that they may carry out the project with low tariffs. But the most important thing is to execute the process. That is to say, it has to be carried out and it has to be completed and implemented. We know that this is not exactly what is happening on average. And we're not talking about a lot of cases, but they are undesirable nevertheless. And I believe that it is a player's obligation to be rational so that energy can be delivered to consumers. Just to end, we talked about gas, we talked about wind and biomass. In spite of all the potential, mainly in your concession area, the presence is very timid in the auctions. Do you think it's going to increase, that is to say, the participation of biomass in auctions? Because do you think the moment has come to migrate to that? I believe that as we see an increase in the price of wind energy and as biomass plants achieve a better and better performance, and we see this with some of our plants, be it because we will have more time to produce energy because the crops were 5 months and they are 6 months and they are getting to close months. And overall, this brings biomass to a more competitive level. And even more than that, we are already starting to evaluate alternatives for the burning of the tips and the chaff and the straw and creating a higher level of competition or competitiveness. And it's going to be a very good fight, wind, biomass, and gas, because each one has its own characteristics, and I believe that the environment that was created for competition will make all of them feasible. Now we would like to close the Q&A session. Now I would like to give the floor back to Mr. Wilson Ferreira Jr. for his final remarks. I think we will have another quarter of good results, and I'm very pleased to be able to share this with you and share the development of a very clear strategy on the part of the company. Our strategy right now is extended with the perspective of renewable energies. And over the next few months, we have a very important mission, which is to establish this platform and to make this platform as competitive as the other businesses of the company. I think it's important to have in this agenda, as I said before, a very positive interaction with the agency so that we may have another tariff review cycle and another tariff cycle in which we may be proud of the benefits, the improvements in productivity, and the sharing of our results with our consumers, and also the stability of the sector by means of the distribution companies. I believe that these are the two most important messages that I would like to convey to you right now, always keeping in mind this perspective, and I'd like to see that the tariff review process is a moment in which the major players, the major market agents, once again face the challenge of showing how competent they are, and we are getting ready to face this moment, and all the articulations that we have been living, all this is fundamental. But when the process is concluded,
a new level of efficiency is required, and we are working with a lot of resolve in order to get there. And on the other hand, it is the moment when the potential consolidations are made more clear. So we see the process in a very bullish manner so that it may bring about more advantages to a group that has been focusing on the strategy, consolidation and distribution, growth and generation, now further strengthened by renewables, not to mention the large power plants, the HPPs and RTPPs that we started last year. And finally, with the potential of the Brazilian market and the growth of the free market, we will be able to use all the skills that we have developed as market leaders in commercialization to the free market. And together with the Brazilian economy and the positive outlook for Brazil, we also see a very positive scenario for the future of CPFL Energia. Once again, I thank you very much for your attention, analysts and investors. Thank you for participating in this call. Thank you very much. We thank you very much for your participation and wish you all a very good afternoon. Thank you.